Right, let's turn to Genesis 4. And here's our theme for the next 3 Sundays that I'm preaching in the evening. Believing in the God of Noah. Now I've got God in small, with a small capital, because we're not talking about real God, but we're talking about the God that many people believe in, and the God that is very tempting for us as Christians to believe in, the God who only says no. So we'll find out what we mean by this, and let's look at Genesis 4, and verse 16. Go. So you know the story of Cain and Abel. Very sad story. Yes, there's a lot of questions around it because we don't get told a great deal of information, really. But the result of Cain's rebellion and murder is that, verse 16, Cain went out from the Lord's presence and lived in the land of Nod, east of Eden. And if you've got an NIV, the footnote for under the word Nod says Nod means wandering. And wandering is a theme that's just been mentioned a couple of times. So he goes out from the Lord's presence. So notice this is outside the Garden of Eden, but he's still in the Lord's presence. This is important and interesting. And he goes to live in the land of wandering, east of Eden. It just happens that my son Kenny is reading John Steinbeck's novel, East of Eden, just now. We were talking about it the other day. It's a story of two families in California, where John Steinbeck was from and where he grew up. And it's a story of the way two families can be. It's grim. If you read Wikipedia, then it summarizes the themes of the novel as themes of depravity, beneficence, love, the struggle for acceptance and greatness, the capacity for self-destruction, and of guilt and freedom. Now, whoever wrote that sentence didn't structure it very well, but it is Wikipedia. But you can see, if this is a story of families, as chapter 4 here is a story of families, then the story of families in this world is often a story with greatness and grimness mixed in together. So there is beneficence, there is love, there is freedom, but there's also depravity and the struggle and self-destruction and guilt, which is a bit like what we've got here in chapter 4. And John Steinbeck was very conscious of Genesis chapter 4 as he wrote the novel East of Eden. And in the verse here, East of Eden means a place people end up in, and this is what John Steinbeck uses it like, is it's a place where people end up when they leave the paradise of God's presence. We end up east of Eden. And what's it like in east of Eden? Well, whether you read John Steinbeck's book, John Steinbeck was a very astute observer of human nature, or whether you look out on the world that you're in today, or whether you read in the story of Genesis 4, east of Eden is a place that is a real mixture of good and of bad. So east of Eden, you see that there are things like farming, there's music, and there's technology. In verses 20, 21, 22, good things, I'm grateful for them. But at the same time, verse 23, 24, there is revenge, there is boasting, and there is murder. Why does Cain end up east of Eden? Why would a man want to leave God's presence? Why do people today end up east of Eden? Why do we sometimes end up east of Eden? Why do people from Christian families sometimes end up east of Eden? Why does this whole society, which has been seen as a Christian society, end up, after a generation or two, east of Eden? Why does Cain end up in the land of wandering, east of Eden? He had a good life. He was an arable farmer, and he was in a good place with his family, a place blessed by God and his presence. And it does seem that God was still there, very much in a way where you could, like in the Garden of Eden, you could actually meet with him. Just like Adam and Eve walked with God in the garden, it seems that you could encounter God in this place outside Eden. And it seems Cain does this in this story and has a dialogue with God. And why would he leave that? Why would he want to leave that and end up east of Eden? Why do things go wrong in human life? Why do people go wrong? You know, what is this capacity we have for self-destruction? And what is this capacity we have to cut off our nose to spite our face? To do things that we know actually are going to be really bad for us, but we'll do them anyway because of some perverse attitude within us. What kind of view of God did Cain have that made him want to get away? What kind of view do we have of God tonight? And does our view of God make us want to get away? Or does our view of God sometimes make us want to get away? Or do we sometimes have a view of God that makes us want to get away from him? This is the sort of thing we're going to think about. Now, I'm going to illustrate this, first of all, not by thinking of the God of Noah, but of the Father of Noah. And this is a very familiar thing that will hopefully help you to see what I'm talking about here. So I want you to think about a father and a son. Could be anywhere. The son is in his mid-teens. And the son is beginning, as many sons begin to think in their mid-teens, and many daughters too, that he knows everything. And he gets into bad company. Because he's blind, because he thinks he knows everything, then no one can tell him anything. And so he doesn't take warnings, and he gets into bad company. And he discovers a new way of living, a new lifestyle, whatever that is. It's not the lifestyle he was brought up with and the lifestyle of his parents, but he discovers it anyway. And it conflicts with the loving values of his home. And so the relationship he has with his father deteriorates. I mean, this happens all the time. The father there in that home always seems to be saying no to his son. The home becomes a place of conflict, a place of restrictions as far as the son is concerned, a place where he can't get to do the new lifestyle that he wants to follow. And the father one day says to him something like, "You know, I'm sorry, son, you cannot do that, or you cannot live like that as long as you're under my roof." And so the son begins to think, well, maybe the best thing for me is to get out from under that roof. It's to get away. And this plays out in many homes, and at some point then the son, if he continues to want to live in a way that is in conflict with the values of his family home, then he will get away. And when he does get away, and the restrictions are taken off him, he will feel liberated. He will feel a sense of great release. He might not recognize that release is actually a bad thing, but he will feel it anyway. And the father is going to be grieved, because this is not how he wanted his son to turn out. This is not how he wanted the story to go. And yet, out of the convictions the father had, out of the values he had, he was compelled to insist that his son didn't follow his alternative values and lifestyle in the home, and also the father wanted to protect others in the home from that alternative lifestyle, that rebellious lifestyle, and so the father was compelled to take the stand he did out of love for his family and out of love for his son, but with great grief and a heavy heart. He would gladly have spent time with his son, but his son didn't want that. His son would always choose to seek others' company. Now, this is a familiar thing, and many of us have been that rebellious son or daughter, I'm sure. And there are always faults, because it's a human story. There are always faults on both sides. And yet, if we assume that the father's values are reasonable, and that the father tries to maintain those values in a reasonable manner, then it is really the son's rebellion that creates the problem and sustains the problem. Because in the eyes of the son, the father is just someone who says no. The father knows that the son wants to get away from. Now, I know you understand that, and maybe it creates pain in your heart to think about it, because you know that this is part of your own story or someone in your family. Just as we've read the story of the father and the two sons in Luke chapter 15, and we've read about the younger brother and his obvious rebellion. I want to live it up with my friends, and waste money on prostitutes and so on. And the father says, "You can't do that, son." And eventually the younger brother says, "Right, I'm off." And the father gives him his inheritance very graciously. Well, he thought of his father at that point as the father of no. Dad just always says no. Whatever I want to do, it's no. But the older brother was also in that situation, although more subtly. You know, he complains to his father, "You never gave me so much as a kid, a goat, that I could make merry with my friends." In even the older brother's eyes, the father was a father of no. Although his way of looking at it was completely different. He wasn't in any sense, he was understanding, rebellious, but he still didn't understand the love of his father, because the father says, "Son, all that I have is yours." But in any case, you can see how children growing up often come to that place where they think, you know, my parents, it's just no. And it feels to them cloying and restrictive, and they want to get away from it, because they want to live their own life and live as they please. And that, I think, is what is happening in Genesis chapter 4 between God and Cain. It's a very wonderful place. It's not Eden, but the ground is blessed. And we know that because, verse 11, "Now you're under a curse and driven from the ground," which, you know, so the ground was blessed, but now it won't yield its crop, verse 12, when he goes away from this area that he's in, this place where the ground is blessed. The presence of God is there, and you can meet with God. You can actually go and meet with God in this place, just outside of the Garden of Eden. Whatever it is. So let's focus in on verses 3 to 5 for a minute. let's figure out what's going on here. In the course of time, Cain brought some... Oh, I should stick that on the board there too. In the course of time, Cain bought some of the fruits of the soil as an offering to the Lord. Okay, so he's an arable farmer. He brings some of his grain or whatever. Abel brought fat portions from some of the firstborn of his flock. So he's got stock, and he brings offering of the animals. The Lord looked with favour on Abel and his offering, but on Cain and his offering, he did not look with favour. So Cain was very angry, and his face was downcast. So there's something wrong with the offering of Cain. because God doesn't look on it with favour. And we'll get ourselves muddled up if we think, well, it's something to do with the fact that it was a grain offering and not a meat offering. It's not that at all. That's really not the problem. The problem is not about the actual offering. You can see the problem when God says to Cain, no, that wasn't a good offering. Cain, it says, was very angry. Very angry. Now, that tells us something. It tells us that this was not the first time Cain had been angry. He was very angry. See, this is not like Cain's had a great relationship with God right up until now. And he brings an offering, God says, no, that's not acceptable. And this is a man who's desperately keen on wanting to have a great relationship with God. And he says, I'm so sorry, what's wrong with it? What do I need to do? He doesn't do that. This is a man who already has a bad relationship with God. And he's already angry with God. So when he brings his offering, and God says no, it just is another offence in Cain's eyes that adds to all the other offences in Cain's eyes about the way he feels about God. God just won't let me do things my way, seems to be what's actually gone on here. He's not saying, well, Lord, what's wrong so I can put it right? He's saying, oh, here we go again. Same old arguments, the same old domestic dispute, if you like, the same old father of no, who won't let me live the way I want to live. And the anger is great. And his face is downcast, wasn't it? The Authorized Version said his face was wroth. He's like the teen. He's well down the road of seeing God as the God of no. And the real problem is explained for us in the book of Hebrews. So Hebrews 11. By faith Abel offered God a better sacrifice than Cain did. So what was good about Cain's offering, about Abel's offering, was that it was a sacrifice of faith. And Cain's obviously there by implication was not. What kind of faith? Well, they both believed in God, didn't they? It wasn't like Cain didn't believe in God and Abel did. You know, that's often what we think about as faith. But two verses on, Hebrews very helpfully tells us what faith is. And it says, anyone who comes to God must believe that he exists, well, they both did that, and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. So this is the second part of faith. Oh, I know you exist, God. And I seek you because you reward me. In the sense of, when I seek you, I find you and your blessing. Now, Cain didn't believe that. So that's the difference. Abel believes that when he brings his offering and seeks God, he will find God and God's blessing. Cain, rather, believes in God, but he does not, at this point, believe that his offering is going to be a means to receiving God's blessing. Instead, his offering is like, here it is, God, and you'd better like it. This is what is called in Jude verse 11, the way of Cain. The way of Cain. It's his way. I did it my way. It's a way of life that God cannot favour. 1 John 3, do not be like Cain, who belonged to the evil one and murdered his brother. And why did he murder him? Because his own actions were evil and his brothers were righteous. So this is a very stark demonstration of the fact that this was not some new problem when he brought the offering, and oh no, it's gone wrong. It's like, this is a man who's got a long history of rejecting God's way in favour of his own way. And so, like the teen in the household who wants to go his own way and sees his father as the father of no, Cain sees God as the God of no. And how many people there are in the world and in the church and even among people who genuinely are Christians whose fundamental view of God is he is the God of no. And this has consequences. So again, I'll go back to Genesis. And Cain was very angry. And his face was downcast. He has, in his own mind, a view of himself that says, you know, if I do it, it's right. It's not unreasonable for me to think that me bringing this offering is okay. Or me wanting to live the way I want to live with my wife and family is okay. And God just keeps saying to me, no. Justifies himself. Not only that, he is very lonely. He might be a bit like Haman in the story we're looking at this morning, who is very lonely. Haman is lonely because the people that should have kept him right just say, yes, Haman, do what you want, Haman, do what you want, Cain, do what you want. Goes around in his head. He can't see clearly because there's no one helping him to see clearly except God. Yeah, I'll come to that in a minute. But Cain is, we can only read this in the story because it seems to be sort of there. He's isolated. He's isolated obviously from Abel, and because Abel is living in God's presence, and he loves it, and he knows God in a personal way as the God of yes, the God of favour. And Cain is really in trouble there because he can't talk to Abel about this, and anyone he does talk to, I'm saying that because it mentioned his wife, anyone he does talk to doesn't seem to be able to help him until God speaks to him and pastors him. And the Lord said to Cain in the middle there, why are you angry? Why is your face downcast? See, if you're ever really angry about something, sit down with someone close to you, or a friend, or a pastor, someone that can help you, and say to them, I want you to ask me this question. Why are you angry? If you're angry, or even if you can just do it yourself, but it's not so easy to do it to yourself, why are you angry? This is the question God would ask. It's such a simple question. It's a great question. If only we would think about why we're angry when we're angry, we might realize the problems are in us. Unless, of course, we're talking about some great injustice in the world or whatever. But not in this situation. Cain is angry, and if he would only realize why he's angry because his view of God is all wrong. He's self-justifying, and God says to him, yeah, if you do what is right, you'll be in the same position as Abel. You'll be favored. You'll be accepted. you don't do what's right, be careful, Cain, because sin is crouching at your door and it desires to have you. You don't realize this, but remember what happened to your parents. You must not listen to that voice, that serpent. You must master your desires to do what is wrong. And this is probably the first pastoral counselling that anyone ever received, and it's good because it's God's counsel to us, and it gives him an opportunity to say thank you, God. If I'm honest, I'm angry because, you know, I, a tiny little guy on the planet, and under the stars that you create, I mean, planets, they didn't know about planets in those days, I don't think, but on the, under the stars you created, in this amazing land, this world that you've given, I'm actually rebelling against you. I think I know better than you, God, who've made me and everything I see. And that's a bit stupid, really, isn't it? And it's a bit wrong. I'm not doing what's right. Sin is crouching at my door. I'm in danger, and I must master my evil desires, and then I will be accepted. And what a wonderful thing it is to live in your presence, Lord, the presence of the God whom, if I seek, you will reward me for doing so, and you will favour me and bless me. But he doesn't do that. Instead, he sticks with his way of living. This way of saying, I want to go my way, and God wants me not to go that way, and Abel doesn't want me to go that way, and my parents don't want me to go that way, but I want to go my way. And he ends up in a really bad place because it escalates. Doesn't always have to escalate in as bad a way as it does here. But it becomes murder and lies and contempt. And it's all there. Let's go out to the field. There's deceitfulness in his approach here. And poor Abel isn't expecting this. And Cain murders his brother. And then the Lord comes to him. And you can see this bad relationship Cain has with God. He even thinks he can lie to God. He has no concern for his brother either. And the relationship breaks down between Cain and God. And if you read on from verse 10 to 15, you can see just how it breaks down. What have you done? Your brother's blood is crying. You know, God says, you've got to go from here. You can't be in my presence anymore. And you're under a curse. You're driven from the ground which I blessed to yield its crops to you. And when you work the ground, it will no longer yield its crops. You will be a restless wanderer on the earth. And Cain says, I can't bear that. Even Cain seems to realize he's done he's made a bad, bad error. But he could say to God, forgive me. He doesn't do that. He could turn to God and say, you reward those who earnestly seek you. Forgive me for the way I've gone and for the decisions I made. But he doesn't do that. He does even seem to be concerned to be going out from God's presence. But he's more concerned that someone will kill him. And God deals with that particular concern. But he goes out to the east of Eden. And that, as far as we can see, is the end of Cain's relationship with God. At all. Getting away from the God of Noah is not a good thing. He's relieved, no doubt, because there's no one telling him what to do anymore. And he can go and live the way he wants. He lay with his wife and she became pregnant. And he wanted to build a city. The word city there, maybe... conjures up the wrong ideas in our minds. It's a word that has a big range of meaning. It can just mean a settlement of some kind. But in any case, he's off to do it his way. And he will in turn come to know the full consequences of his decision. he can never ever come back into God's presence unless he repents. He comes to see how wrong he was and how right God was, and that God wasn't the God of no. In fact, God was the God of yes. So Cain went out from the Lord's presence and lived in the land of Nod, east of Eden. And just going back to Hebrews, bottom verse there. Oh, Cain. Cain, if only you would believe not only that God exists, well, you know that, but that even now, if you earnestly seek him, he will reward you. But you think God is the God of no. And what you need to see, Cain, is you are the Cain of no. He is the God of yes, but you're the one who's saying no to him. Now, we'll say a lot more about this, God willing, in the next couple of weeks, because there is a lot more to say. But I guess it boils down to what God said to Cain. If you do what is right, will you not be accepted? God says, I'm willing to accept you tonight. Maybe you're living yourself tonight with this kind of picture of God, which feels claustrophobic, feels restrictive. Because maybe there's a sin in your life that you're wrestling with, and you know you just can't really do it, you can't get away with it. God says, you can't do that and know my blessing and my presence. But you're still fighting. And so, unbeknownst to you, God has come to be in your eyes a God of no. You've lost sight of the gospel. You've lost sight of the lens to which God will go to show you his love and to welcome you home. But because you're trying to go your own way and you're trying to build your own city and just live life in your terms, you've lost sight of the God of yes, yes, yes. The God who sends his son to the cross because he so wants you to come to him, wants you to live in his presence, wants you to know his blessing. But subtly, he's become the God of no. There are lots and lots of people out in our community like that. People who may well even have felt that in church, that's the God they learned about. The God of no. They didn't somehow get the grace of the gospel. Abel was not accepted because of his sacrifice, because of his fat and meat. He was accepted because God so loved the world that he gave his one and only son, that whoever believes in him, and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him, will not perish, but have everlasting life. He is not the God of no. He is the God of yes. We are the people of no. And we must recognize that, confess it to God, and ask for his mercy to receive us so that we may not be restless wanderers on the earth, but so that we may be living at home in the presence of our loving Father. Amen.